folks, this is Ricky Warwick from Black Star Riders, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey Metalheads, Scott here.
And Richie.
And welcome you back to yet another episode of that, which we call Focus on Metal. So, last episode we had a whole crap load of topics, and see what we get into this week.
This week is, last week's one was load, this is reload. Same time.
We can't get to Lulu. We are not getting to Lulu. Somebody brought something up. I can't think who it was. It might have been Metal Mike, posted, I'll have to show it to you, this chart of all the Metallica albums. And it's very well done. It's kind of like a, if you like this, you'll listen to this. And off to like this one side was Lulu. And I was like, God damn it, I forgot about that album. Like, you suck. Like, you had to bring that album back in my head again. But
do you own that?
I do not own that. I will not own that.
Me neither.
Yeah, I can remember with all the hype back when they had the printed So What magazine, all the hype and just magazine space dedicated to that frickin' album. And then it just like, what a flaccid mess. It was, holy Christ. Oh, yeah. I know it probably sounded really good in concept, and I mean, Lou Reed, legendary guy and all that, but wow. I do not ever foresee myself buying that. And this is somebody who has bought multiple copies of Saint Anger. So, yeah.
An Invincible Shield.
Oh, that's more. That's I actually, up there now, I got the very, very limited Japanese edition on cassette.
Of course. It was the 8-track.
They didn't do an 8-track, but yeah, I saw that came out, and it was like, I shall have it. So I think it might be 1,000 copies of that, but I have one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Which you will never play.
It is sealed. You won't even be able to know the track list because it's all in Japanese. The whole cover's in Japanese.
Great. Bonus tracks? Who? I don't know. Who cares?
It's like, yeah. I know. I'm a vinyl whore, but...
All right, so what do you want to talk about first?
Well, I know that one of the things that was getting a lot of talk right now is M3, which has traditionally been really thought of as a like 80s hair band revival festival. And it seems like this year they're going a little different. I think there's still the core of that, but it looks like it's not like they had it before, which is almost like, okay, we took Rocklahoma and we moved it to Maryland, which is kind of what M3 has been, which isn't a bad thing. But it looks like this year they've done a little bit differently, and it also seems like they're going for some more, I don't know what to call it, more of like key... Almost reminds me of like Donington. You've got like this really big marquee thing that anchors the day, and then a bunch of other bands. Although one of the big marquee ones, if you look at, which is what I think Friday night, where there's like that person and then what, two other acts?
Well,
maybe?
I have. Let's go through. We'll go through the lineup.
Okay.
Right. So I'm going to start with the band. Like as we're recording this, this is the lineup that they've announced. Now, they probably will maybe add bands to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So the 2nd of May, Snake Oil, who I have no idea who they are.
Right. This is the Friday night,
yes,
right?
And Sebastian Bach.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Isn't Roth on that day too?
No.
I'm pretty sure he is.
No, he is not. So they're the only two acts that I can see for the Friday. Saturday, a band called Red Voodoo, who I've never heard of, who actually started commenting on my post about M3, because someone was complaining on it about the bands being really old, and Red Voodoo commented saying they're all in their 20s. So I'll have to check them out. A band called Child's Play, who I've heard of but don't own anything by. I think they were they one of these late 80s bands that had a major label, but there was a million other bands that sounded like them?
Oh, you're right. That changed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Steven Adler.
Yep.
You got Slaughter.
Yep.
Winger.
Yep.
Except, and the anchoring guy on the Saturday is David Lee Roth, who hasn't played a live show in, I believe, 4 or 5 years since he did the Vegas shows.
Yeah.
A bit of a shock seeing him on it. You know, is he going to do other shows other than that? I don't know. Yeah. What sort of shape is he going to be in?
Who knows what he's going to do?
He's probably, is he going to just mail it in? Is he even going to even show? Because I've heard people say he's in, just give it a couple of months, he'll probably decide, no, I'm not going to do it.
Well, it's possible. I mean, it's the gospel of Dave. So,
who's playing with him?
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what band he has.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me if he just has these guys that are brilliant musicians, but none of them are name guys.
Could be. Yeah.
You know, all right, I'll throw it out there. Get the fucking Eat 'em and Smile lineup and play that show. Can you imagine that?
I know
the schedules probably don't work.
Yeah,
but
they won't.
But can you imagine if they announced that fucking Roth was playing with Eat 'em and Smile lineup? You're like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Like that, now, there's a fucking one-off.
Yeah.
Like if
I don't even think he could even sing that Eat 'em.
I know they tried to do it in Vegas years ago, and they got shut down by the fire marshal.
Yeah.
And they haven't tried it since then.
Yeah.
But here's your opportunity.
I think at that point, I think Vi will be in Japan for G3.
Yeah, and God knows where Billy Sheen will be.
Right.
Or Greg Bissonette.
Yeah.
But you know, that'd be something else if David Lee Roth doing Eat 'em and Smile with that band. Fucking hell. Roth's just going to go up and mumble his way through a load of Van Halen songs, and everyone's going to be drunk anyway. So they're not going to give a fuck, and they're all going to say, oh, he's brilliant. Like, he's, don't give out about him, he's in his 70s. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, who knows? We'll see. Like you said, he probably will cancel.
So. Yeah. So of course, the original lineup of Winger.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
Slaughter is going to be Mark and Dana.
Uh-huh.
Right. Adler, I don't know who else is in Steven Adler's band. Child's Play, I don't really know much about. So now let's go to the Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Spread Eagle.
Yeah.
Different around here, are they?
And they've been pretty, for the last, what, I want to say maybe 3 years.
Who's that, Ray West? Who's the singer?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, they're from around here, aren't they? Yeah.
But they've been pretty active now the last couple of years.
Yeah. And then you have Vixen, which is Roxy and, you know.
Yeah.
Because Lorraine Lewis is not in the band anymore. See, she's doing OnlyFans
now. Yeah, she's doing OnlyFans now, yeah.
66 years of age. Yeah.
And she's doing, and she's getting Femme Fatale back together.
Yeah.
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 But everyone's been ignoring the Femme Fatale part, and everyone's on the OnlyFans part. So.
Oh, are you?
Well, I'm just saying, that's what's getting the press.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. You've Lita Ford. Great White.
Yeah.
Warrant. Ace Frehley.
Yeah.
And then you have Piercy and Dee Martini of Rat.
Yeah.
Who, when we're recording this, just announced that the band consists of Carlos Cavazzo, Matt Thorn, who I think is the bass player in Steven's band.
Yeah.
And Blas Elias.
Yep. Yeah, who's already going to be there because I'm pretty sure he's still with Slaughter.
That's what I was going to ask.
So you basically have people that are already going to be there.
I thought Zoltan Chaney was a Slaughter drummer. And Jeff Blando, the guys that play with Vince Neil. So I was wondering, was Blas going to be doing double duty? I don't think Blas is playing Slaughter shows. He might be playing here and there, but he's not the... he's not the drummer all the time.
Because, yeah, last time Mickey went, it was Blas.
Yeah, I don't think he does all the shows, though.
Huh. Okay.
So whether he does the Saturday and the Sunday, I don't know. But there's your lineup.
Yeah.
Here's have you ever seen a more, or heard, read about, or heard of a more dysfunctional band than Rat? I haven't. You might say Dokken, but
yeah, there's
no.
A lot of them back then that are pretty dysfunctional.
No, but so. you go through the lineups of that band, and it's all fucked up.
Well, yes and no. For a while, it wasn't, right? But
you're talking 80s right now.
Yeah, but when you get when you start having the fact that, you know, Robin starts to fall down, right? And so he basically ends up having to cede control almost over to Steven. And you got Warren, who's kind of, he's like the Dave Murray of Rat, right? So when we talked last episode about Dave, kind of, you know, Warren's kind of his easygoing guy. He just wants to play guitar. He doesn't want to have arguments. However, he does, when sometimes at a point he gets pushed and it's like, fuck you, when he pushes back, which is good. But, you know, I think it's a lot of egos and a lot of money involved. And like I said, when you all of a sudden you take the other strong personality in Robin out of that mix, because he just isn't capable anymore with you know, the drugs and stuff. Yeah, it starts to have things to crumble. So, yeah,
because they got back together in the mid 90s, mm-hmm. and it's Bobby, Steven, Warren, Robbie Crane,
mm-hmm.
right? So no one. And then they get rid of Steven, and then they get in Jizzy Pearl, and they get John Corabi in.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to get my timeline here right then. And then Steven comes back. I'm confused. I know Steven came back, and then Juan was with, when the last time I saw him, it was Juan, Carlos, Warren, and then Bobby was gone.
Uh-huh.
And then Steven did a show, I think, in the Whiskey or somewhere a year or 2 years ago, and Bobby was playing drums with him.
Uh-huh.
And now Juan is gone, and Steven's in with Warren.
Now you have Juan, the voice of Rat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is
boggling. It's just, like, and I know Steven's gone out of his way to say that he's not going to perform as Rat again. I believe, because of all the shit that's been going on for years. I think even he's sick of it.
He had all
these fucking court cases. He had all these books that came out. Bobby had his book. Steven had his own book. You know, and they all had different versions of what happened, what went down, what sort of money they were owed, you know, who owed what,
uh-huh.
who wrote what. We spoke to Bo Hill, and he was saying, banging her head against the wall, some days you had these guys calling him at 2 a.m, I want my song on the record, and
uh-huh.
then the other guy would be calling him 10 minutes later, he's not getting his song on the record, I want my song. And I'm like, fucking hell, like, just dysfunction. How they actually made all those fucking records work is fucking beyond me, but, you know.
They had good producers, and for the most part, they know how to write good songs.
Yeah, they don't have a bad album.
Yeah.
And I know after their 80s heyday, after Detonator, they didn't bring out much.
Mm-hmm.
But what they brought out was fucking good. Like, that self-titled record that came out on Portrait in 99, I don't think it's crap.
Yeah, well, the thing, too, you got to remember is, I mean, they do Detonator, and basically
it's all Warren.
And it's also, at that point, the record labels moved on to grunge and other things, and there's, like, no support to, like, continue making more of those.
Yeah.
So they were, at least they were new, like, oh, we're fucked.
Yeah. And Infestation's a good record.
Yeah.
But since then, Steven's done a couple of solo records, and they're good, too. But, you know, I thought Bobby might have been playing with him. You see, this is the thing with that. Like, 2 years ago, he would have got up on stage and played with Bobby at a show.
Yeah.
They might be fucking screaming at each other now, for all we know, you know?
Right.
And because we had Juan, a couple of years ago, Juan on stage with Steven.
Yeah.
Apparently, I've heard now that they're not fucking talking to each other anymore either.
Yeah.
So it's like, fucking hell. Like, it's just, the shock is not Steven playing the show. The shock is Warren for mm-hmm. me playing the show. Because, again, what I've heard is that Warren, you know, he doesn't need the money.
Yeah.
There's something in his private life to do with, you know, a relative he had or something like that, that he has money.
But he's, he, likes to play. He's a guitar player.
Yeah, you know? But he doesn't play that often.
Yeah.
And he's getting back up now with to play with Steven.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is great for Rat fans.
Yeah.
And he's got Carlos, which I think is great as well.
Yeah.
You know, Juan, that'll, you know, Bobby and Juan over the years, Bobby has gone on record. He had a lot of bad things to say about Juan.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Juan is not part of this and Bobby's not part of this. So that'll tell you that there's bad blood there between whoever's on the stage, like Stephen or even Warren. Yeah, they don't want Juan on the stage. They don't want Bobby on the stage.
Like you said, I mean, it is going to be, it will always be a soap opera. Some bands like get through that. I mean, think of the, you know, we'll go back to, if you really want to dig into this too, you can always read the new book from Brian Heaton about Jason Slater, where he goes into this whole thing with Queensryche and all of the stuff that was going on with them and how Jason's in the middle of that. But it's the idea of, okay, you're going to go see Queensryche. It doesn't matter what the picture is on the poster. You're not going to really know which band you're seeing until you walked in there and you were like, oh, I guess we're going to a Jeff Tate show. You know, you just didn't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, at least now they've kind of divided and there's not any soap opera for that anymore. But that could have gone on the same way too, right?
Mm.
And who knows? You may find that it's going to come to being, you're going to find that all of a sudden Rockenfell's going to play with Jeff and, you know, and who knows? But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I don't ever foresee Rat ever being like a stable thing. So,
yeah. What do you think of the lineup overall?
I think it's pretty good. You know, I think they're trying something that's a little bit different. I think that they are stacking the day correctly in that, you know, you're going to have kind of those lesser known bands that are on earlier and stuff. And so they have a good chance of getting a break. I will say that when you compare Saturday to Sunday, I can see Friday being short. It's probably going to doors will open later. There'll be fewer bands. But it does seem to me that it's overstacked for Sunday.
I can see that.
It's almost, it's birds of a feather on Sunday, where it's like, yeah, all of these things belong together. But that is kind of more, that is the closest to how prior M3s have been is that day. Or I think you have a little bit more, not like a Sweden rock mix, but a little bit more of what you might hear that will change somewhat on Sunday. And who knows what the fuck Roth is going to do.
The one thing I do like about it is they have gone out of their way to get exclusives for headliners.
Yes.
They haven't picked a band that is on the road anyway as a headliner.
Correct.
So it's a case of, right, we have Roth.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to see him anywhere. Well, at the time I'm talking to you, you're not going to see him anywhere else.
You might not see him there.
And Piercy and Demartini.
Yeah.
I don't think they're probably not going to do a run of shows either.
Correct.
Well, if this is successful, they might. I don't know.
Right.
But to me, if you're an 80s fan, these are the two drawing points.
Right.
You can see Vixen anywhere. You see Slaughter every weekend or everywhere.
I think Warrant, they put some effort, which is great, right? One, it's an East Coast festival. Fantastic. It's been around for a couple of years. It's had its ups and downs. It's been times where it's been a question of, are they even going to do it the next year type of a thing? But I think they're trying to, in some way, separate themselves out, like I said, of just being like Rocklahoma East. And they are, as you said, trying to say that these are things that these are this, you know, put a little bit of FOMO in there. And, you know, if you don't come, you're not going to see this. You're just not going to see it anywhere else.
Yeah.
So I think it's a smart move on their part to do that and see they, and you know, there's some festivals, not really here in the US, but you know, there's some things that are like, you know, Vakken's going to sell it before you even hear the lineup.
It just is, right? Sweden Rock is going to sell tickets, may not sell out, but it's going to sell tickets before you know what the lineup is. I think even if, I guess the one U.S. thing would be the Monsters of Rock cruise. I think that would sell out even before you knew what the lineup was, too. You know, but this one, it doesn't have that kind of cachet yet, but it looks like they're trying to be intelligent and make some changes and not just throw the same crap at the wall and wonder why they're not advancing anymore. So I think that's good.
I think as well that the headliners they have for both of those nights, there's there's not really a lot of other 80s bands out there that are bigger than them that they could get those members together. That you have Piercy and Demartini of Rat, who haven't performed in years.
Yeah.
And you've Rot from Van Halen. Can you think of another 1-2 punch of a band, an 80s band that haven't been around in a long time that could headline, that are bigger than Rot or bigger than Rat?
Well, I mean, even...
That haven't done it in a while.
If you really, okay, because if you really think about it, I mean, Roth was big in Van Halen.
Yeah.
But was his big legacy continued really after he left Van Halen? I mean, he went down pretty quickly, right? I mean, Eat 'Em and Smile.
Skyscraper.
You know, was as far as buzz and performance and everything, home run, right? Skyscraper, great stuff. I still involved, but not as good as Eat 'Em and Smile. And then it just continues to go down from there.
Yeah.
Where, and in some cases, you know, you've got, you know, fantastic playing from with Jason Becker, right? But it just doesn't really ever go anywhere. And and so those are, you know, so it starts to go down. Now, the other part could be is, and I don't know, I'll throw it out there, but it could also be that this is a little promotional effort from Dave to promote the David Lee Roth box set.
Could be. Does he need the money, though? They always need more money, these guys, don't they?
I think he's
success
pretty,
gets
he's
head.
Well off anyways.
I think so. He's got two diamond records.
But with anything else, no matter what else it happens with the Dave Show, he is a very smart guy. And, you know, even, you know, getting insight to that, you know, what happens when you talk to Darren from the DLR cast and stuff. And, you know, no matter what else Dave actually does, he's a very, very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
So he just doesn't do, like, stupid shit for the hell of it. So if he's on for M3, he's on for M3 because he needs something.
The money.
Yeah, you never know.
Adulation?
Know. He's like a little chess player.
He needs an ego boost? Adulation?
Well, he definitely needs that. He needs that all the time.
Okay, well. So that's our M3 talk. So what are we on to next?
Well, we touched on, I mentioned the DLR box set. And I'll say, and
you getting it?
There's been a lot of, what's that?
You going to get it?
I did, yeah. I ordered it. There's been a lot of talk from our buddy, the hair metal guru, and going back and forth about he started doing some unboxing videos. So you can check out his YouTube channel for Hair Metal Guru and check out. So we started to get into some of those. And one of the things he was commenting on was the marked difference between the quality of the Rat box set versus the Motley Crue Dr. Feelgood box set. And I agreed with him that basically they don't compare. The quality and the effort put into the Rat box set, my opinion, and it was his as well, is, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in there. It's a pretty decent value for the money, and it's pretty comprehensive for what you get. Whereas the Motley Crue one, which at the Motley Crue site is still listed at $200. It's a mostly empty box. It's a pretty box, but it's a mostly empty box there's a lot of paper goods in there that are just kind of ephemera, and there's not a lot. And I have a copy, but I ended up being able to get a copy brand new for $99. If I couldn't have gotten it, I was no way I was paying $200 for this. And I was not going to order till it popped up and be like, all right, I'll do it for $100. But even when I got it in, it was kind of like, this is kind of chintzy. And, you know, comparing it to the Rat one, which is, it's heavy. It's packed with stuff. It's I think, really, really well done. And I think right now you can still get that one, I want to say, for $174. I've seen it less, just not from some really total, like, places I'd say that I 100% can say I can trust them. But I've seen them at some trusted places for like $174.
So let's go into a little more detail on this. So the Rat one is a 5 Studio Records. It's got a nice glossy book.
Yep.
It's not hardback though.
No, but it's
got
a bomb.
It's got a poster. It's got a tour book.
Bumper sticker.
Replica tour book.
It's got a single. It's got a laminate.
Oh, it's got Nobody Writes for Free, doesn't it? The song on Point Break as a 7-inch, right?
Yeah.
And it's got a tour program, a replica? Maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So the Motley Crue one, right?
Yeah.
Has the album.
Yeah.
What else? A lot of paper?
Yeah, a lot of paper.
So there's no live shows. There's some demos, right?
Yes.
But it's on a CD.
Yeah, there's not like, I mean, even if you pick up the two boxes, I mean, the Motley Crue one feels like an empty small pizza box. And
yeah.
The other one, it feels like a pizza box that's been packed full of like meat strombolis. It's heavy.
You see,
there's
here's
a lot
what people
of stuff in there.
Here's what people sometimes they'll say about one of the things they'll say about box sets. How much control has the band had or you know, in contributing to this?
Right.
Now, Motley Crue owned their masters.
Correct.
Right. So they have 100% control.
Correct.
Over this.
Correct.
And it's lacking.
Uh-huh.
Right. You know, what I want from a box set, especially from a record, right? The album, of course, for definite,
yeah.
Right? Either remixed or remastered.
Yeah.
Right? If there's live stuff, a concert's recorded, they should be in it. That's a given.
Yeah.
A lot of the times I'm buying the box sets. One is for the music. If there's a book and I'm paying a lot of money, hardback, nice, glossy hardback book, lots of pictures, lots of contributions from...
The Motorhead ones I have.
Lots of contributions from all the band members, people that were around at the time, you know, pictures, magazine covers, all that. A comprehensive look back on that record.
Yeah.
I don't want the fucking press release.
Yeah.
Right? That sort of shit.
Right.
I don't want that.
The other one this has
that
makes me crazy. And I will say that Black Sabbath's done it too, is the poster.
Yeah.
I don't know who the hell wants a giant poster of the Dr. Feelgood album cover. Like, now maybe when this was in the charts, okay, people might want that. But otherwise, it's... And I saw that same thing with the latest, with the Tony Martin box. Why do we have this giant ass poster? Now, if they had done a replica tour poster from that tour, I'm all over that. Okay, that's awesome. But just this kind of gratuitous giant album cover poster, like, no. Like, that's another thing that to me is like, why? Why would you bother with that?
So I'll give you...
And do I need a Motley Crue Band-Aid? Like, why is that? Like, why? Well, why?
Yeah. Yeah. So I picked up a few box sets recently as well.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject of box sets, I'll talk about them. So I got the Paranoid Waves and Moving Pictures.
Yeah.
And anything that Rush bring out, the quality is fantastic.
Yeah.
The Moving Pictures one, I think I got it on Amazon. It was $75. Mm. Five LP.
Yeah.
One of them was a whole concert that was recorded on the exit stage left.
And it's a nice jacket.
That concert is amazing because unlike Exit Stage Left, it's one show.
Yeah.
And it's fucking fantastic, right? And Permanent Waves, it's the super deluxe one. And I picked that up cheap as well, but it's got this fantastic hardback book with pictures, and it's got live vinyl, you know, show from different shows on the tour, and the album's done, and Hugh Symes done different artwork, and there's just a shit ton of work put into that. But the music that they give you is worth it, and the other stuff is like the icing. Where I think with the Dr. Feelgood, that you know, the music is the fucking icing, and the other shit, which is the whole cake, is lacking. You know, if you understand what I'm trying to say. But so the other one I bought was the Cult Sonic Temple.
Yeah.
Now, the Sonic Temple one, I'm looking at the Dr. Feelgood one, right?
Yeah.
It's probably, I'm going to say, 4 inches thick.
Okay.
Right? And it has the album, which is a double album.
Yeah.
And they have the B-sides on it. It has, I think it's like an 8-track BBC radio concert recording.
Mm.
Right. So I think it has like most of the songs from the album that they played at that show.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at that and I'm thinking they would have recorded the whole show. So, you know, it would have been better if the whole concert was on it, but they have that, right? They have a booklet which I think is like 10 pages. Mm. And it's not even hardback.
Yeah.
It's okay. And then they have like this sponge part at the bottom of it that you can put a cassette tape in, which has the demos.
Okay.
And a backstage pass.
Yeah.
So like 1/3 of the actual package of the box set is the sponge.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm looking at it and I'm like, the music is good. Like the album, I really do like Sonic Temple.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it just looks like there should be so much more.
Yeah.
In this, and there isn't. So on one hand, you have the Rush ones, which is cram full of stuff.
Right.
And then you have 1/3 of the Sonic Temple one is to fit a cassette tape in.
Yeah, I mean, I know like all those Metallica ones.
Oh, they're amazing.
The bottom of that is like that too, but the amount of stuff that's in those is ungodly.
Listen, I don't care, and there's loads of people out there that hate the Black Album, but to me, the box set for the Black Album for that is the standard.
Mm.
With the amount of stuff you get for that.
Yeah.
Like, how many CDs are in that? 12 or 15?
What's funny is, well, I mean, it makes sense, but that one shelf, you would be amazed how much that one shelf with those box sets
it
values. You would be like, holy crap.
Oh, yeah.
But the least valuable one is the Black Album.
Yeah, because they're out there. There's more of them out there. It's the biggest selling album.
But even in general, they made more of that set than all the others.
Yeah, but I think just to look at that for what they give you, and I think I got that, I think it was, my wife and kids got it for me from a Christmas present. I think that was $200. Mm. But for what you're getting, that was big time value for money.
Mm-hmm.
Shit ton of live stuff.
Yeah.
You have the fucking Black Album. You have, I think there's a 12-inch single in it, a hardback book, beautiful photographs by Ross Halfan. It's really well
done.
They're really well done. And, you know, there's no fucking sponge things in that, you know, with a cassette tape in it and stuff like that. It's cram full of stuff.
They're well done.
Yeah. The Sabbath ones are well done.
Yeah.
You know, we spoke about Anno Domini, but the earlier ones are well done.
The Whitesnake ones are...
Well, Coverdale is involved in that.
They're all very well done for that, yeah.
But...
The Motorhead ones, same thing. Those are great. Granted, they're smaller ones, but they're still... They're awesome. And they're, you know, we got like Crusher involved with a lot of the writing and the artwork and stuff like that. And it's, they're pretty awesome. So I've been pretty happy with the Motorhead ones. even the whole open it up and the whole like stage thing comes out and stuff, which is one of the Arch Enemy ones I have does that too. But that's a good box set. I mean, the box for Black Star Riders is a little bit lacking. That was kind of like a
Is that for a record?
Yeah. It's
Didn't even know it had one.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that's another State of Grace.
Yeah.
It feels light.
Yeah. Kind of like a.
See, this is where people are saying to us, you know, why don't you do a fucking YouTube channel? We could actually see this.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a little whacking.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And that's a good album, actually.
It is. Yeah. So that was kind of a. Hey, we'll throw the support out anyways. We like the artist.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's one where it's kind of like, well, why'd you do that?
Yeah.
And you know?
Of course, Rush being my favorite band, I was bummed last year that they've done it up to Signals.
Yeah.
Nothing on Grace Under Pressure.
Uh-huh.
This is the 40th anniversary of Power Windows, which is one of my two favorite Rush records. And I haven't heard anything on that either.
Well, they did the multi... album box.
Yeah, but what they've been bringing them out for, they brought one, they've been doing it for all of the albums so far.
Right.
Up to Signals.
Right.
And then they stopped.
Yeah, I almost actually bought the Signals one today. But I mean, the fact that they did bring out that one, everything on vinyl, all in one, it's over there. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you look back.
The thing too that you have to remember, right, is. You're going to have more people interested in Permanent Waves, Moving Pictures, and Signals.
Yeah.
Right? Because then after that, you start to get into much more of the synth era of Rush. And you will have people, because those other three albums, you could be a non-Rush fan and still be aware of a lot of those songs on those albums. But when you start to get to some of the other ones, if you're not that hardcore Rush person, you may not have the album at all. You may only know the potential single that was on the radio and you really didn't care that much about it. And you see that similar thing before that, because it's not like they didn't put a box out for Caress of Steel and if they did that, I think that it would probably be done really well, but it would also have a very limited appeal, right? It's going to be the same person who's going to want to have one for Hemispheres. You know, it's that. And that's not going to be that same demographic of Moving Pictures.
Yeah. There's certain bands that, like, I'm talking now big 80s hard rock bands, and you could, or even metal bands, and you can name names if you want, but like there's one or two come to mind for me that had massive records, and I've never seen the comprehensive album box set from them, and I'm going to name two of them. They're not metal bands at all, but I'm going to name them anyway. First one is Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Right?
I thought you said you were done with them.
Yeah, I know, but look, you take the New Jersey record, right?
Uh-huh.
So that sold like fucking 8 or 9 million or whatever it was, yeah. Right? It had six singles.
Yeah.
Right? Massive record. Right? Yeah. They came out years ago with, they had a two CD version. They had shit tons of demos.
Yeah.
And all that. And they played a shit ton of live shows. I'd say a lot of them were, you know, obviously some of them would have been recorded. Like that's crying out for a fucking huge box set. An Aerosmith, Permanent Vacation or Pump or something like that.
Well, I mean, they did put out the box that does cross both, you know, the record companies. So you didn't just have a Columbia or a Geffen. So you have that. And yes, I have multiple copies of it. I even just scored a only available in Japan, 6 CD version of that box set.
Okay.
You do have that. I don't think you're going to see a lot of the other, because the other thing too with a lot of those things that were the other jams or unused songs, they, for Aerosmith, also came out in Pandora's Box.
Mm.
And there's, and.
But that was more 70s, early 70s, early 80s material.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to see a lot, hear a lot of other extra stuff for those other albums.
Well, you,
especially when they start bringing the extra songwriters.
Take Get a Grip, right?
Yeah.
So you had that record, and you look at the singles, how many non-album B-sides were on that? There was probably 4, 5, 6 songs.
Yeah.
So you put that all together in a box with the record, put some live shit in there, maybe all the videos too and whatever like that, and that's pretty fucking comprehensive.
Yeah, I don't, from a vinyl box set, I think they'd have a problem moving it. If they did it, like Coverdale did his Whitesnake stuff for a CD thing, they might have a shot.
Okay.
What? But I just look at the demographic and who's apt to buy that.
Mm. What bands come to mind for you?
And you have more people like me that would be more willing to buy something that would be a 70s than that. And it just, I just think it's also the way that when you start talking about something like Get a Grip, Nine Lives, because yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to hear the, because the Nine Lives one that everyone's familiar with is the one that's done by Kevin Shirley.
Did a different producer.
But I think Brendan O'Brien that did the first pass at it. So yeah, you'd have a whole other album there if you wanted to, right? But that's when that came out, you're talking about at the same time where either people were buying everything on CD and they really weren't, it was also you were at that point well into iTunes and digital files and not really caring about physical media, so there's a balance there too of people that like that, but people appreciate that want to hear the other stuff, and that does go by a certain demographic. And is it worthwhile to do it financially? And I don't think it is.
So, like, name some '80s bands you'd like to see a comprehensive box set from.
Anthrax.
Which album?
I'd like to see a total box set, just an across the board, not a single album.
Okay. Like the Rat one, where just the studio mm-hmm. albums in a box set with maybe a book or something like mm-hmm. that. Okay. Well, you'd only get... that might be hard to do with the Elektra stuff because it's a different label.
That's but the other thing that comes into play with it too.
All the different labels. Okay. And anyone else?
I could see them trying to flesh out some of the Saxon stuff.
Okay. I'm talking more about one album.
Well, that's what I'm saying for Saxon would be like, yeah, do they have something that's there for Strong Arm of the Law? They could do a bigger set with some live stuff and some, you know, tour photos and things like that. That would be, they could do something very similar to Motorhead. That would be catered to the demographic of people that bought physical media.
I'm surprised Maiden haven't done it with anything. Maybe they will, but I'm, because you have a band like Maiden, they're more known for their visuals as well as the music.
Yeah.
Like when, if Maiden bring out a box set with all that artwork, fans are going to fucking buy it.
Yeah.
You know, you get a fucking, you know, like Sabbath did with, say, like, you know, that Live Evil.
Right.
They were really, imagine Live After Death.
Right. But I think
that they had like multiple nights at Long Beach, not just.
I think if Maiden did that though, that would be something that they would do after they're done touring, that Rod is savvy enough to be like, nope, we're going to hold off, lads. We'll wait till we need a new revenue stream and we'll do that.
The other band I'm surprised I haven't, no, they've done it, but I'm talking about one record with extra stuff on it, is Van Halen. You know, get a, just say like Fair Warning and then you get a fucking live show from the tour with the record and fucking artwork and all that, like, fuck me, I'd love to see that, you know, or, you know, any of the tours,
because,
you know, Eddie Van Halen's gone now.
I mean, I do have him. I mean, I've got a lot of Van Halen bootlegs,
but Van Halen don't for up until Rot left in 84, they didn't have a live record, an official live record.
Yeah.
Which was an anomaly back then.
Right.
Like every other fucking band had like a couple of albums, then you bring out a live album. Right. Van Halen?
None. I believe they tried to do one and it got fucked up, but yeah. But yeah. even like...
I'm not counting that Tokyo Dome thing now.
I have a bootleg of the Live Without a Net on vinyl.
Yeah.
It's not officially on vinyl. Yeah. I have one.
Okay. I know there's live stuff out there from the Roth era.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as official stuff goes, if you get a box set together and you get that, you can put an official stamp on that stuff and say, here's a fucking live concert from Women and Children First.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, I'll have to get that.
But then you have to do the other thing with that, which is that, you know, I've got the Warner Brother demos on vinyl. And that's been bootlegged in, you know, like at this point, I think like 7 different versions.
Yeah.
The same thing with, I've got the Gene Simmons demos on vinyl too. So for a lot of times too, a lot of the people that really want that, we've already got it.
Hmm. What about some of the Kiss records? I know they've done some of them.
They have. They did a really good one with Destroyer. I've got that over there. They should really do it for
With Creatures of the Night.
Not as full-fledged. And the other thing with what Kiss has been doing drives me fucking crazy. Is they have this thing they do now, and they've done this. I want to say they started it with Creatures, but they will do a drop. They will have this very limited, low number box set with a lot of stuff in it in limited quantities, along with other things like a satin jacket or something like that. So there's this ridiculous price point, and the only way to get this is to buy the bundle. And they do the similar thing then with the next one down, where, you know, like the Hut in the Shade one that I got. I couldn't get that version of the vinyl unless I also bought it in the bundle with the hoodie. Just like, and then you have, okay, basically just the Workaday vinyl re-release, which is like, well, then if I've already got the vinyl, I don't want to have the vinyl again. Like, if you haven't really done anything different, like, you're not giving me value, so why would I want that? So you're stuck. They're upselling the shit out of you. And I would think, take that nice deluxe thing, eliminate all the other ephemera that you want to sell with it, make more copies of it, and put that out by itself. But they don't do that. So they're very limited. And the thing is, they sell out usually within the first hour.
It's Kiss fans.
You know, it's
Kiss fans,
it's
are nuts.
Crazy.
Yeah. Kiss fans are nuts. That's the...
But you can still go and get that version of the Destroyer one that I have, which is an awesome set and really well done. That's another one that's a heavy ass and there's a lot of shit in there. But they could do that same exact thing for Love Gun, for Rock and Roll Over, and I think they would sell very well. And they could do probably something similar, maybe, for Alive too.
Okay. Yeah, you want it done for 70s Kiss. I want it done for 80s Kiss. Yeah, I'd like to see a revenge box set.
Yeah,
but it's probably not going to sell as much as the 70s stuff.
It probably won't, and there probably isn't as much stuff either, because you also have the thing there where it's, we've got limited time, we've got limited budget. Who's around? Okay, Gene's going to do his song. Paul's going to do his song. It's almost like a collaborative bunch of solo stuff being done on one album together. You know what I mean? It's not the, hey, let's jam together, let's get this song, I don't think there's a lot of that, like, stuff that was almost good enough but didn't quite make it. I think it's more like, okay, we got enough songs, let's cut this, let's move on.
Mm. The other band I'd like to see one done, and we already talked about them, was Queensryche.
Yeah.
An Empire box set.
Yep.
A lot of stuff recorded on live on that tour.
That might do well. Or, I mean, the classic one is always to go and do Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah, I'd love Rage for Order one, but not.
Yeah, I just don't think
dodgy photos though with the band's wardrobe.
I don't think it will sell as well.
I know, but Empire was a big, yeah, Mindcrime. Yeah, if you get a big, a nice big box set on Mindcrime. You know, big book with pictures and, you know, they, of course they had the
maybe you the throw live the Mindcrime concert. At the Moor in there as a
the, the live concert was recorded and released later on.
Yeah.
You bang all that in a package.
Yeah.
I think that would, yeah, that would do well because one of the things you notice, I think, a lot with these 70s or 80s bands, like the concept albums are really the ones where you can go to town on because you already have the storyline and, you know, like the likes of, you know, Yes had like Rush, you know, Genesis.
Actually, Rhino just announced they're putting out a Yes Close to the Edge box.
Yeah. So with those bands, like all that artwork and all that kind of stuff, it's already set up for a box set. All you got to do is just expand on all of that. But the framework's already there for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Mindcrime, yeah, that'd be a great one. Will it happen?
I mean, there's other ones too that will, I'm sure that, you know, Def Leppard's kind of tried to do like smaller like bites of that with like Hysteria and stuff. But I could even see other like non-metal bands. Like, I think that if Cheap Trick did a box set of Live at Budokan, they'd make a killing on it.
Mm.
Including it, because they can also include like the full concert, which, yeah, it's available as a bootleg. I think I have it. You know, there's a lot of stuff that they could put in that, and I think it would probably sell well.
And there's another one now that came out a couple of years ago, because I have the double vinyl of it. And there's live tracks on the second vinyl from that album. Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules.
Mm-hmm.
Big box set of those two records.
Yep.
Put the whole fucking show that those songs were recorded on as part of it. Fucking amazing.
Yeah, those would do well.
Yeah.
Especially Heaven and Hell.
Like, I'd rather those than repackaging fucking Live Evil. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, you remix Live Evil. There's nothing really new on it. Expand Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules.
Yeah.
I'd be like, fucking hell, I'm fucking buying them before I'm buying that.
Yeah, I mean, they did do, although it only really came out on CD, but they've done two different expanded deluxe versions of Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell, but never like a vinyl box.
Yeah, a big box.
Yeah.
And especially Heaven and Hell.
Yeah.
Like, that album cover is iconic. You know, the album is a fucking masterpiece.
Yeah.
Or even Holy Diver would be another one.
Yeah. Yeah, that would definitely be a good one. I mean, Heaven and Hell, yeah, I mean, that's a 10 out of 10 album. Holy Diver, yeah, that would be, I mean, they kind of missed it with, they've got the couple of live things that they put out from those shows. They put the Joe Barisi mix as a special release. There's been these, like, chunks of stuff.
What about British Steel? The Priest album. They haven't really done one on a Priest album, have they?
No, they really haven't.
No. That's no. See, it's all about catalog now, you know, and going back and repackaging stuff. And it amazes me that Priest haven't done one album.
Yeah, that would be. I'm not sure. I mean, they were pretty. If the documentaries and everything on making that are factual, they don't have a lot of extra shit, so they'd be depending on a lot of live stuff for British Steel.
But with British Steel, you probably had what, three singles?
Yeah.
So they probably came out on 12-inch singles. Put them in there. Put the album in there. You might have some live material.
That's fucking about it. You're not going to have any like
nice hardback book.
You know. Yeah, I mean, it would be a good one. It again, it fits the demographic of people who bought that on vinyl.
Yeah, exactly. Or do the Turbo one for me.
Well, they did.
Our Defenders.
There is a I have an expanded Turbo.
No, but not a. I'm
the 30th. About a big, I think it was 30th anniversary one. Yeah.
Yeah, I have it, but
yeah.
I'm talking about a big box set with vinyl and extra vinyl and 12-inch singles and stuff like that. Priest haven't done it. Megadeth haven't done it. Slayer haven't. No, they actually, not in the early stuff, they haven't done it. Again, a lot of this is licensing, and is it even fucking worth it?
Right.
Yeah, there's a fucking million bands I can think of now that I'd like to see him done. Yeah, Leopard is an interesting one. It's like, I know you gave me the Pyromania one, but that didn't come out on vinyl, which surprised me because you had Rock of Ages, you had Photograph, you had three or four singles on that.
Then you've got the CD boxes I have.
Yeah.
The three different, and there should be a fourth coming out at some point.
But I thought they'd bring out the Pyromania box.
Right.
They didn't bring out a Hysteria box on vinyl, did they? And you had six singles on that.
Yeah.
Like that album sold fucking 15 million copies or something in the US.
There's a singles box that I have up there.
Maybe they're going to do that in 2027. I don't know because it was Hysteria 87. Yeah, it was. So maybe they're going to do that for the 40 or that.
Maybe. Yeah, they really haven't done anything.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right.
But I'll still keep buying albums.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And trying to figure out, as I try to get more space, to rearrange and then go, shit, I'm out of space again. And then rearrange and go, shit, I'm out of space again.
Your floor is going to collapse here. The fucking weight on one side of it.
It's a good thing it's a giant old concrete factory building, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I don't look forward to having to move them at some point.
All right.
Oh, all right.
Are we done?
I think we're done.
Yeah, we're done.
All right. Wow. We made it through the second episode of 2025.
Yeah, I'll see you in June.
All right, cool. It'll be warmer, maybe. All right, with that, that's it. There ain't no more stick a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for myself and
me,
have yourselves a great middle week. And until we talk to you again in June, as always, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.